Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
All right, I know I've talked about this a bit recently, but I just still am so bothered by it, and so I'm going to start the episode today with this. It is still hitting the 40s every day, and we are now, today is January 7th, and almost every day for the next 15-day forecast, it's going to be above freezing at the high. Now, we do have some lows that are showing that they'll get decently low, down into the low 20s and even teens, which is colder than we've had all year. But highs in the 30s and 40s in January around these parts is just unheard of. And I've noticed that the projections keep changing. Earlier, you know, last week I was looking at the forecast and it was showing that every day was going to be in the teens as a low and that the highs would be below freezing. And that's starting to shift and it's showing more sustained warmth. We're showing a possibility of snow in the next couple of days. But again, with highs well into the upper 30s and 40s, I don't know that it'll stick. And I'm starting to wonder if this will be the winter in which there is no snow. On that note, I've got three different articles or three different topics that I want to touch on today. Because we were so put off, I guess, over the holiday by the different setup that we were doing with reviewing the past episodes, and because there were some days off, and because of Donald Trump's posture and actions in Venezuela and other countries, it's kind of taken over. There are a few things to talk about that have been going on over the last week or weeks that we haven't had a chance to touch on. So I'm going to just kind of go through three of those today a little bit more rapidly, I guess, than normal. The first one is actually a post I noticed in the Collapse subreddit. This type of post is always interesting, but should be taken with a grain of salt. It says, the CFSV2 climate model is forecasting a blue ocean event in September. There's an image, and this is from the NOAA. It is an official model, but they have several different models. This one shows two different maps with overlays on them with different colors looking at the Arctic. You've probably seen these maps before. The first one shows anomalies in concentration by percentage. And almost the entirety of the Arctic is covered in the red that looks like 30%+ anomaly in sea ice concentration. Very small portions on the outer edges are in the 20 and 10%, and maybe even a little section here or there with 5% anomalies. But something like, if I had to guess, I'd say 98%, 95% of this map is covered in 30% anomalies. And scrolling down, looking at sea ice totals, it is showing that the vast majority are 15% or less concentration. In other words, it looks like a blue ocean event. Now, that said, the poster of this map in their submission statement said, the CFSV2 is a NOAA climate model that forecasts average weather conditions out 8 months. With September now in range, I noticed the Arctic sea ice extent output shows near total ice melt for the peak of the melt season. A disclaimer is that I've been following this model for several years, and it does tend to overdo the sea ice forecasts, but I've never seen it forecast a BOE. In addition, we are currently at record minimum sea ice volume right now, so there is less ice needed to be melted than any time in observation history, adding some credence to the forecast. I also had noticed, looking on Twitter or X, a post showing another map that had very high anomalies currently in the Arctic, especially in the American side of the Arctic. And the post was talking about how we are in the midst of record-breaking warmth in that portion of the Arctic. It will take a few days before data comes in and really shows the extent of that and the impacts. If you're familiar with Zach Laib, he has a great website in which he keeps some really cool graphics that show sea ice extent and concentration and all of that. And yeah, he shows that we are at, or very nearly at, record lows for this time of year. His data always lags a few days, so if you go there right now, well, I guess right now at this time that I'm recording this, it's 3 days behind. At the time that you are listening to this, 1 week from now, so probably sometime around the 14th would be my guess, then you would be able to go back and see, has the warmth from these last couple of days either caused melt or restricted the amount of ice growth? Just because the warmth is anomalous for this time of year doesn't necessarily mean that it's above freezing. We are in January when the amount of freezing is supposed to be at its peak. Okay, now all of that said, again, there is a huge caveat on this model, which typically apparently overdoes these assumptions. It is expected that we'll hit a blue ocean event sometime in the next decade or so, though I think if it were to happen in the next few years, it would have to be because of a strong storm. I don't think we have the warmth baked in to take us all the way to BOE, you know, by 2028 without massive storms that break up the ice and help carry it away. But I also am not certain. I think we can all agree, though, when it comes to reading posts on Reddit, you should definitely take it with a grain of salt, especially when the poster has a username like Piss Stored in Balls. Of course, the comment section is filled with people hyperventilating, freaking out, saying that this is the end. It's always good to take a step back, look at the big picture, and breathe, because people have been saying that this is the end, this is the year it happens, this is our last good year, if you can call it a good year. But that's not how things work. Things always end up working slower than many people might think. Okay, moving on from there. Thousands in Berlin go days without power and cell service after cables are set on fire. A far-left group took responsibility, saying it was targeting the energy industry. Officials predicted it would take until Thursday to reestablish power in all areas. This is in the New York Times. There are articles about this in the BBC, in The Guardian, and many others. Not hard to find, though this is the first I've heard of it, which is surprising because this took place a few days ago at this time, and more than a week ago for you listening. This one caught my attention, especially because in my family, we do a long shot bingo thing. I've talked about it before, but this year we kind of got more serious about it. We put a point system to it and we created tighter guidelines. And anyway, we're nerds, but it was just kind of fun. But this was one of mine, was that there would be repeat eco-terrorist activities by one person or group throughout the year. This has only happened once this year, at least by this group, which I had not heard of before. But it certainly has had a big impact. It says that initially the cuts affected 45,000 homes, which would be, 100,000 plus people, and 2,200 businesses. By Monday night, the city restored power to some neighborhoods, leaving still 27,800 homes and 1,450 businesses in the southeastern part of Germany's capital without power, as temperatures stubbornly stayed below freezing and snow and ice blanketed the ground. City authorities predicted it would take 6 days until Thursday to reestablish power in all areas, a timeline that has shaken public confidence in the authorities' ability to respond to such attacks. So again, this cut power to homes. It also cut cell service. And in Berlin, it is the dead of winter, with temperatures getting down below zero. It says the perpetrators set fire to a cable bridge that contained five main power lines. They planted incendiary devices underneath the cables, according to Franziska Giffey, Berlin's senator responsible for infrastructure. Last September, a power failure caused by a similar attack on infrastructure left 45,000 people without power for 60 hours. Temperatures, though, were milder, so that attack caused less disruption. Now, the group in charge of this, or responsible for this, left a sort of a letter or a manifesto. It's very long, and I'm not going to read all of it. I read through some of it, and it does make clear that the group is upset about fossil fuels, climate change, ecosystem, biodiversity loss, those types of things. Many people are claiming that it is a false flag attack and that it is, you know, it was done by the right to try and pin blame on the left and make the left look bad. At this point, though, that is speculation and who really knows? So it is interesting, and I think we will continue to see more of this. I think this type of stuff will grow. So will the punishments for it, especially in places like the U.S. I could see this becoming a big issue as the Trump administration looks for ways in order to demonize the far left. And so, that will continue to possibly spread throughout the Western world. And if this is a false flag, then this is one way in which they could be attempting to do just that. And of course, this brings about, again, the question of what is the right way to inspire change? If you have a small percentage of the population who really views and understands the existential threat of collapse, what is the proper way to make the other 98, 97, 95% of the population understand it? I am definitely not here to say what the right way is. I don't know what that is. But I imagine that people will get more desperate and that their attempts to be heard will result in more things like this. Okay, now lastly, a superbug has hit 28 states, including Alabama, and that is pertinent because this is an Alabama newspaper posting this. It says where the deadly fungus is spreading. This article is about the Candida auris, which is a yeast or fungus that causes serious infections. You may have heard about this in the past several years. It is a growing concern, especially this year, a year in which numbers have exploded. Now, I'm not an expert on this. I'm not going to pretend to be, so I will only tell you what I know about it. It showed up in 2009. According to this article, at that time, cases were very few. It didn't really hit the U.S. until 2016, that year with 51 cases. 4 years later, in 2020, there were over 700 cases. And this year, there are over 7,000 cases that have been reported by December 20th, so of 2025. The fungus attacks people who are currently immunocompromised primarily, so people who are already struggling with other sicknesses. That makes reporting the death toll difficult because you might be dying of something else, right? And you get this and it causes complications, but then what do we really call the cause of death? That said, all in all, something like 36% of patients who come down with Candida auris die. There are different types. Some of those types have led to death rates as, you know, close to 50%, as high as something like 47 or 46%. Needless to say, if and when this continues to spread in hospitals, which is where, you know, it's of biggest concern, because sick people are coming to the hospitals with it, because it's a fungus, it's not a normal, you know, bacterial infection. It cannot be removed as easily or in the same ways. It requires a different type of disinfection than regular bacteria. And so it spreads. And it spreads in those hospitals. And who's in those hospitals? Well, sick people. The people most at risk for contracting and dying of this infection. There are many issues that make it so that this is hard to eradicate or even contain. It is unusually hard to kill. It's more resistant than other types of Candida species. You can take antifungal drugs to combat it, but it's more resistant to that than normal. It survives for a very long time, up to weeks at a time, on different surfaces. And the standard disinfectants that hospitals use are not effective against it. I read that it can also be present without symptoms, so it can sit on your skin for a long time without you knowing that it's there. And it spreads via different things inside of the hospital. So things like gloves and gowns and bedding, sticking it in the washer is not enough to kill it. Now, this is a super bug, meaning that in many cases it's become antifungal resistant, right? We use antifungals for a lot of things. And the more that we use them, the same thing is true about antibacterials, these diseases, these, in this case, fungi, emerge that are able to be resistant to that. They evolve. You have, of course, seen or heard about The Last of Us or played it. And the whole idea of that game is that there is a fungus that evolves to survive in humans, one like Cordyceps, which actually takes control of its host in order to facilitate further spread. You know, that is not what Candida auris is doing. It is not taking control of or, you know, making people zombies, but it is using its hosts as a place that it can grow, that it can anchor itself, and then that it can spread. It just so happens that it's using hospitals to do that. It's important to know that outside of hospitals, your risk is very low. If you are hospitalized, if you're a long-term care patient, you are more exposed if you have things like central lines or urinary catheters, if you're on a ventilator, the types of things that are more invasive. So you can check and make sure that they are all necessary, that they are only being used for the extreme cases in which it's needed, and of course, being proactive about hygiene, double checking that everything has been disinfected properly. But this is the type of thing that's scary because masks don't help. Topical antifungal at-home treatments are not going to help. There is no homeopathic fix for this. This is something that fails or succeeds at an institutional level. It's not an individual thing. It's the healthcare system that's being hit by this, and it's the healthcare system that's failing at controlling it. I do not want to think of a future in which this continues to spread exponentially and effectively makes hospitals an unsafe place to be. I don't think we're there yet. Obviously, there are millions of people in hospitals and only, 7,000 infections this year. But that's a tenfold increase over the last 5 years. Continuing at that rate, and it won't be long before it is genuinely a very potentially dangerous situation. All right, that's it for today. As always, I appreciate you being here, and take care. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.